That was around the time that he tied me up and tortured me. Was when I was trying to leave. We had broken up and he was calling me. And I just was trying to defuse it. And so I went over to the house and he took me up to the bedroom and I walked in, the kneeler was in the middle of the room. And I just, like, I just knew what was gonna happen.
Yeah.
After he tied me up and hit me over and over and over again with a whip, which was a Nazi whip from the Holocaust with a swastika on it, because I'm Jewish. I was tied to a kneeler, and he hit me over and over again. And he said he was gonna hit me in the same place over and over again so that it would really hurt. And then he shocked me with the violet wand on the welts. He shocked my private parts. And it hurt so bad that I broke the kneeler in half. I jerked so hard that I broke the kneeler and collapsed in just like a pool of tears in his arms. And I remember in that moment thinking, just tell him whatever he wants to hear. Just tell him whatever he wants to hear. Tell him what he wants to hear. And I said, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I was begging for forgiveness. And he was cradling me and saying, you understand now. And then he cut open his hand right here and made me drink his blood. And then he cut me here and drank mine. And I don't know if anybody else experienced that, but I didn't know that. I just didn't know that that was a thing.
Welcome back to Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weisop. Today is a bonus episode. This is the third bonus episode in the month of April, adding to the 100-plus bonus episodes that you get on the supporter feeds, on the VIP section, and the Patreon. Rockfin gets all of the bonus shows from November 2020 to present. But as you know, we started Patreon back in 2018. And then the VIP section is the one and only supporter feed that gets you every single episode I've ever done all the way back to 2014. It's exhausting. It's confusing. I'm very sorry. You know, when I started podcasting, I didn't want to do it. I'll tell you right now, I didn't want to do it. I had people reaching out to me asking for it. I was like, no, I blog and I write books. That's it. I'm not doing podcasting. But as fate would have it, you get kicked off of enough platforms and YouTube and such, and here we are. So, bonus episode number 3 for the month. This is the one, if you recall, back when I made my little promo for the April 2022 NPR-style campaign push, I said, this episode's going to be worth your $5. And I mean it. And if you're not... If you signed up for April and because you wanted to catch all these bonus shows and you get done with this episode and you think, you know what, I want to be a free feed loser, let me out of here, just message me. I will refund your money, no questions asked. Because I feel like this is going to be very eye-opening. This is very important information we're talking about today. This is what separates us from the normies, okay? We read books like this. And we understand some hidden motivations, at least what we believe, right? A lot of people don't believe this, but I think it's more convenient to believe that stuff like this can't happen because you sleep better at night. And I'm on the other end and I say, I think this stuff could be happening. Do I know it for a fact? No. Is this book we're going to talk about today without a doubt 100% fact? I don't think so. I don't know. It's hard to say. But today we're going to talk about all the topics. We'll talk about blood, We're going to talk about cannibalism. We're going to talk about high adept Satanism, according to this guy, Kurt Barker, in a book he wrote under the same title. It's called Cannibalism, Blood Drinking, and High Adept Satanism. I'm going to walk you through the book. I'm going to give you the basics of what he's saying. Of course, if you want to go deep into it, you can read his book. It's actually really good. It's actually a really easy read. But what's interesting is we're going to compare this book to the film on Hulu called Fresh that we just did our second bonus episode about. I dropped a lot of teasers in the Fresh film analysis for this book review because you're not going to believe what you hear. The short version, this book that was written years ago, lays out in detail the experiences Mr. Kurt Barker claims to have experienced as a victim hanging out with these people, growing up in families that did this kind of stuff. I'm going to clearly point to my beliefs. I'm going to clearly point to the ideas in the book that are obviously in the film Fresh. Very detailed things show up in the movie that Mr. Barker claims happened to him in real life. Now, what's the explanation for this? It's possible that the people that made the film Fresh simply read Mr. Barker's book and used a lot of the imagery and ideas for the film. That's one possibility. And it's possible that Barker made the whole thing up. And this is all just fiction, fantasy nonsense. Another option is that this stuff really happens. Mr. Barker really was a victim of this. And there's an agenda to make a film to plant the idea in our mind that, oh, this is fiction. All of this is fiction. It's that. It's like that movie that was actually kind of funny. Which is what I think, but that's just my belief. I don't know that. I don't know that for a fact. And in fact, this book was in my Amazon wish list for a few years. And I never actually read it until I watched Fresh. And I finally thought, you know what? I'm going to read. Because here's what happened. I watched the movie Fresh. And a lot of people wanted an analysis on the film. And I was planning on doing it. There wasn't a ton to talk about besides the obvious, you know, clearly what the movie's about. And as I try to do shows to entertain and inform you, that's my goal, without scaring you at the same time, without making you angry, that's my goal. I thought, what can I do to spice this up? I know, I'll read that book and see if there's anything we can, you know, discuss in more depth. And it was very odd because at the same time that I read this book and watched the film Fresh, I also watched the two-part HBO docu-series on Evan Rachel Wood and her experience with Hollywood. And on episode 2, she goes into detail about how Marilyn Manson, when she was dating him, drank her blood and he made her drink his. He was practicing blood drinking. Now, of course, typical to all Hollywood mainstream media sources, they didn't go into it. I mean, could you imagine having a conversation with someone and they say, yeah, I was drinking blood, and then not following that up with why? Why did Marilyn Manson drink blood? Why did he make you drink blood? She just mentions it, and that's it. Then they just move on. I'm like, of course, that's very typical. And that's what we do here. We go deeper into it. Why? What's the motivation here? Sorry, I keep messing with my hair. If you're watching the video, I'm having a weird hair day here. And then also, at the same time, there was a joke meme created. I don't know if you remember the whole M&M scandal, right? Remember the M&M scandal where they changed the candy and the green one, who was the sexy one, now isn't as sexy as she could be? Anyway, I sent this joke about the brown M&M eating the green one. And the joke was that it was cannibalism, right? That's the joke. I sent it to my man, Jimmy the Jackhammer. And he said, hey, wasn't the green one the one that was just in the news because she was supposedly the sexy one, and then all the right-wingers got upset because Eminem decided to tone her down and make her less sexy? And I said, you know what? You're right. And it's very strange because that fits into all of this analysis. It fits into the film Fresh and into Barker's book, where they like to eat the sexy girls. Again, seems strange to point this out, but maybe, just maybe, creating the culture through memes, entertainment, planting the idea that, oh, this is just fictional fairy tale, it's just a joke, maybe that's done on purpose to cover up a real insidious truth that the people doing this stuff are really trying to hide. Case in point, Evan Rachel Wood. Why is Marilyn Manson drinking blood? It's because it's high adept Satanism. And we're going to go through Kurth Barker's book, which reveals why it's all happening. And in the conclusion, I'll give you my final take on, you know, is this book real? How much can we believe this? So let's get into the book. This is going to be a long show, so buckle up. We're not two-parting this one. We're doing one whole show, so strap in. And strap on. You got to get a little water like me. Get your water going. Now, the book, right? Let's get into the book. He has some interesting ideas in this book, obviously. He claims that he was a victim of satanic ritual abuse, SRA, right? That's what we call it in the biz, SRA. And it was because some Nazis brought to America in Operation Paperclip were then trained in MKUltra, which, right off the bat, I'm reading this and I'm like, oh boy, this is like every conspiracy theorist fantasy tale, right? And you know the history here. Operation Paperclip is the one where we took a bunch of the German Nazi scientists and brought them to America to help us with our rocket program. And that ties us into Jack Parsons, Wernher von Braun, all that, right? The Soviets, they took some other flavors of Nazi scientists over to their country, and so on. And MKUltra, of course, the project that existed from the 50s to the 70s, where the CIA was drugging the population, unbeknownst to them, in the sake of trying to do mind control, create the Manchurian Candidate. All kinds of stuff. They destroyed all the documents. There's only a few left. They barely admitted to it. But the things they did have left were pretty damning. I talk about it in Sacrifice Magic Behind the Mic if you want a more detailed look into MKUltra. And in the book, he even talks a little bit about how it's an Illuminati experiment. MKUltra's real purpose was to take traditional Satanism and turn it into a scientific method. So it's really the science of satanic ritual abuse. Now, without going off into a side tangent, because we got a lot to talk about, that sounds very much like the whole concept of worshiping aliens, worshiping the demonic entities. We talked about this in my Use Your Illusion books on aliens. The idea is that the Collins elite, this group of supposed Christians that have prevented the government, the DOD, the CIA from really getting deep into channeling extraterrestrial entities from other dimensions, these Christians were the influence that said, look, these things are demonic. That's why Jack Parsons was channeling them. And they sort of created a culture of being hesitant to embrace this thing. And they're out of the picture now. That's what Lou Elizondo has been claiming. They're out of the picture. And they're now actively channeling demons, I guess. I don't know. Sounds crazy, right? But you see, the CIA was doing all these experiments, Project Stargate and all that, that they consolidated in the 90s, the Project Stargate. All these ideas of the mind connecting through quantum physics, through scientific method, to using satanic rituals to channel entities. I think there's a clear amount of evidence that this is what's going on. And I tried to lay that argument out in my books. We'll see what happens. And we're going to come back to this before the book is over. Now, what's disturbing, what gives legitimacy to Barker's claims, are that he says that someone in this Nazi MK Ultra crew actually also ran a ring of child abuse. And you know which kind I'm talking about. I don't want to say the words. This show's already very much a problematic, cancelable show that they don't want you to know about. So I'm already a little bit hesitant. I'm a little bit puckering up about the repercussions that I might get from this, from the likes of Patreon, for example. But that's why I got the VIP section. That's why I got a Rockfin, because free speech lives everywhere. But Patreon's been good to me so far. We'll see how this, we'll float this one. We'll shoot this across the bow and see how they take it. Now, yeah, so he says the Nazi MK Ultra crew, they were running this child abuse ring, right? And they used it to secretly film powerful men doing the things to the kids for blackmail. Now, that sounds very familiar, does it not? That sounds very much like Epstein. That sounds very much like Jerry Sandusky. Sounds very familiar. Now, in the book, he talks about the ringleader, and the ringleader was called the Baron. And the Baron worked for the committee in Europe, who worked for the Illuminati, which he claims the Illuminati is the most powerful Luciferian secret society in the world. According to him, apparently they do go by that name. The Enlightened Ones, the Illuminated Ones, enlightened because Lucifer shines his light upon them. He steals the flames from... it's the Promethean tale, stealing the flame from the gods and giving it to man through technology. Man will use this technology to create the transhuman and evolve man into something greater than the creation that God gave us. Because they believe that God is really the evil demiurge from the Gnostic version of reality. Who knows? Now, if you recall, in the film Fresh, in the credits at the end, they had a round table with all the elites that used to eat the humans sitting around it. And the round table is an Illuminati reference from a group that actually went by this name in 1909. It was the round table because no one person was at the head of the table. It was equal powers, right? It's the banker cabal. It's the usual suspects, the United Nations, the CFR, the Trilaterals, the Bilderbergs, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, the Club of Rome, all that. So it's interesting that he calls out the leader that he worked under, but he was saying, look, there's a group, and I read through the lines and say that group is what is depicted in Fresh. A round table, not one key figure, right? Now, it's interesting because the copyright of the book, it says 2014 and 2019. So he must have made some updates for the 2019. I assume that's the version I have. Well, it's got to be. I don't assume. It's got to be. So this is obviously post-Epstein news because Epstein got arrested for his second time in 2019 and, you know, killed himself. Now, I would like to know if the intro written was from 2014, because that would give it a lot of genuine credibility. But even though Epstein, he was arrested in 2008, right? And it was controversial because he basically got off the hook because his lawyer, Alan Dershowitz, who's also Trump's lawyer... And Dershowitz would go on later to be accused of being one of these people that was abusing these underage girls. So even in 2014, all that Epstein stuff wasn't really a secret. It just wasn't commonly discussed, really. Now, the idea of the Illuminati being Luciferians, a lot of people get hung up, myself too. What's the difference between a Luciferian and a Satanist? Well, there's different shades of occultism here, right? But it doesn't matter to Kurt Barker he says in his book, they're different entities, Lucifer and Satan, but they use the same, he has a great analogy. He says, they use the same phone. You don't know who's going to pick up when you call, right? He says, and I quote, the name Lucifer can be associated with the planet Venus and the ancient goddess Ishtar. The name Satan can be associated with the planet Saturn and the ancient god Baal. Depending on what form of occultism is being practiced, one might use these terms Satan or Lucifer differently. Now, it's interesting because if you read Kubrick's Code, my book about the great Stanley Kubrick and his films like Eyes Wide Shut, which, look, this Eyes Wide Shut movie is just levels and layers. This is why it took Kubrick so many years to make this movie. It's unbelievable. But I talked about the Star of Ishtar being present. It's the eight-pointed star. It's all over the film if you look for it. And that makes sense when you understand the Illuminati associate Lucifer with the ancient goddess Ishtar. And when the second greatest actor of all time, Tom Cruise, goes into the mansion, the Somerton Mansion, you know, the Rothschild home, he goes in there and you see the light bearer statues of the female goddess. This is very much the Venus, very much the goddess Ishtar is present at this inner sanctum of these occultists. He says some Satanists, Luciferians, whatever, the Illuminati, we'll call it the Illuminati. The Illuminati, they're the most powerful aristocrats and they practice blood drinking, cannibalism, and child abuse. And they learned it through generational Satanism. And the generational Satanism is an idea that genetically you pass on trauma. And this is a real thing. As you know, I go to therapy. And I've heard about this. Me and my therapist talked about this, about generational trauma and how you can transfer genetically some forms of trauma. It's very bizarre. So if you came from a parent who was abused themselves, in some ways you carry that burden with you. Really strange stuff. But he says that the real motivation to become one of these types of Satanists is about obtaining more worldly power. And I'm going to read you. It says, if you pray to Jesus, he may show you how to become a better person, how to be happier, or how to achieve serenity. But Christ isn't necessarily going to show you how to fulfill your worldly desires. Satan, on the other hand, will promise you things like wealth, political power, lust fulfillment, and revenge against your enemies. Now, that's a very interesting idea, and it explains why you see some of these artists, some of these celebrities, they seem to embrace both Christianity and Satanism. Like Ozzy Osbourne and Black Sabbath, they wear the crosses, but they're clearly talking about dark stuff. So which one is it? Well, it could be a little bit of both. They could be calling out to the one for the wealth and power, but then also embracing the archetype of Jesus to achieve serenity. So it's possible these people actually worship both. In Barker's story, he talks about how he was subjected to child abuse and he was actually enlisted to become a prostitute as a child, which is where he met the two sisters. And the two sisters relayed to him the understanding about the Sphinx being a symbol for obtaining worldly power, which is related to cannibalism. Now, this is very fascinating. Listen to this. Quote, this is why the practice of cannibalism is necessary to the attainment of aristocracy. And that is the secret of the Sphinx. It has the body of a lion who eats people, but it has the head of a pharaoh who looks human. So it's the perfect symbol of aristocratic cannibalism. Wow. I mean, I don't know that you could make that up. And that's how I feel about most of this book. I'm like, these are some pretty interesting ideas, if that's really what the Sphinx is. He's saying it has the lion, which is king of the jungle, the apex predator, eats humans. And that's what the aristocrats view themselves as. Lions eating humans. Only they have the head of a human like a pharaoh. Now, because of his status as a child prostitute, he would, and you know, there's connections to MK Ultra and all this stuff, right? So he had an altar, because through traumatic abuse, one sometimes fractures the mind and creates an alternate ego, which is an argument you see a lot about why these celebrities act the way they do. And his alter ego of Kathy, because they would make him dress like a girl sometimes, because these Satanists were into some weird stuff, right? But the Baron, the guy who's running the local ring of Illuminati, apparently, and he describes him as a tall, handsome man with graying hair, and he was actually pretty fun to be with, he says, which, again, adds more, like, genuine... The way it reads, I'm like, this seems pretty realistic. Like, if you went through this, like, he kind of defends him. He's like, look, like, this stuff happened to me, and to be honest, that guy was kind of fun to be with. But I feel like if you were trying to make this story up, you would be like, oh, this rotten guy or whatever, you know? Just interesting. It's just intriguing the way he wrote it. Anyway, the Baron had a butler, a driver, a bodyguard. And he was also sexually into a bit of everything. Kids, adults, all genders. And it sounds very much like Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell. They were into a little bit about everything. And what's curious is that Barker talks about how it was easier for him to just be nice to the Baron because the Baron would sort of take it more easy on him. Which is exactly what you see in the plot of Fresh. Remember that? Remember when the main protagonist, Noah, she's reading a magazine, and in the magazine there was a message left there by a previous victim saying, look, if he gave you this magazine, that's because he likes you. You need to use that to your advantage. If he likes you, be nice to him, and maybe you can get out of here. So again, there's another point that the two overlap. So anyhow, the Baron, he's taking Barker through his altar, Kathy, as a little girl, dressed up as a little girl, to meet the two sisters. And listen to this. I'm going to read you from the book. I noticed that many of the windows had bars on them, which had been hidden by the curtains in front of them. From the outside, this house may have looked normal, but from the inside, I could see that it was not. I realized that this home was like a prison or a bank. It was all locked down. And that meant the Baron. Sorry. And that meant that the Baron and I were locked in as well. But the Baron seemed unafraid. And so I kept on smiling. All right. Now, if you watch the film Fresh, that's exactly like Steve's house where he locks up these girls to get their meat. All locked down. Everyone was locked in. But it gets worse. He actually talks about how they were served human meat there. He says, the two sisters explained where they got their human cattle meat. They said that once a year they harvested a family of migrant farm workers. During the summer, the roads of the Midwest were frequented with cars and trucks which held the families of poor and often undocumented farm workers. These were people who, if they went missing, would not be searched for by the authorities. Fresh and healthy meat for the taking. Now, how coincidental, it says fresh right there. Another point of overlap. Very, very strange. And we're going to come back to how this house seemed to have been portrayed in the film that he was at. Sorry, I'm just trying to figure out where to move on my analysis here. Okay. He explains how the sisters, the two sisters, they would pretend to be Christians trying to help the poor so that they could get victims by drugging them through the food, and the poor people wanted to eat, so they would drug them. And this is kind of like what you see in the film Fresh. Steve pretends to be something he's not, and he drugs the women. Because remember in the film, he gives Noah a drink and it's got the whatever in it, GBD, GBH, whatever it's called. And she conks out. And this is a theme you see a lot from the occultists, from the Illuminati. Adam Weishaupt, of no relation, of course, you know, my pseudonym. He talked about there's several examples, and I wish I had them memorized readily, of, I think the Knights Templar practice this, the Assassins practice this, of trying to assimilate into the local culture so that you could keep doing what you're doing. In fact, I'm reading this book about John Dee, and he allegedly did the same. He learned it from this other guy. I don't remember the name. I'm very sorry. But the whole idea is that you assimilate to the local culture because the things you worship are not acceptable. As it obviously would be if you're talking about eating meat. And not to mention, like, the term esoteric talks about the inner sanctum of the religion. Like, there's a hidden religion within the religion. So even if they're Christian, they might... It's kind of like Freemasonry, right? You join Freemasons and they're like, oh, we're just teaching, you know, values and virtues. Well, there's an inner sanctum. There's an esoteric side that allegedly that you get into the inner ring and they teach you all this Luciferian stuff. That's how the theory goes. When he's hanging out with the two sisters, they get served human meat, which is, again, the same thing as in Fresh. He actually serves human meat to Noah. But he said that the sisters, they would eat with utensils until it came to the human meat. They would eat that with their hands. Again, a very bizarre detail that I feel like you wouldn't really make that up. And in the film Fresh, you'll notice, if you looked at the images I put on the Instagram, they flash to the different Illuminati guys eating the meat, and one of them is like a dog eating it off the bowl with no hands. Very similar. No utensils, I should say. No utensils. He's also not using hands, to be fair. And this is where it gets really weird. He talks about how, okay, so he's over the two sisters' place, and they take Barker and the Baron to the basement. This is where their satanic temple was. I'm going to read to you from it. It's going to blow your mind. They were not standard-sized stairs. The depth of each stair was too shallow, and the width of each stair was overly narrow, and there were no handrails. Now, would you be shocked if I told you that the exact scene in Fresh is the same way? They were narrow stairs. They were very shallow. There was no handrail. It was exactly as it depicted in the movie. And I put the image on my Instagram under the Fresh film analysis. You can check that out. Unbelievable. Now, in the book, they make it to the temple, the satanic temple underground. And there's two sphinxes guarding the entrance because, again, it's a symbol for aristocratic cannibalism. And each one has a pillar by it. One is white and one is black. Duh, we all knew that was coming, right? And inside of this temple, the floor had the black and white tiles, which is the Freemasonic Moses pavement. You see it in all the Freemason temples, right? Just like the chessboard, the Boaz and Jachin. We've talked about it many times. He actually doesn't even say that in the book. He doesn't point out that it's Boaz and Jachin as the twin pillars, which to me adds more credibility to the story because he seems pretty well-versed in conspiracy talk. So it was kind of weird that he didn't call them by name. Now, but what's even stranger, do you remember in the film Fresh, she's being escorted down the hallway because she's like, look, I got to take a shower. And Steve's like, all right, follow me. And he escorts her, and the film takes painstaking notice of artwork in the hallway. And I posted it again. You got to check out the Fresh images I put on Instagram. It shows two women playing chess on a chessboard. So again, I mean, I don't know. There's so many parallels to the film. You almost got to believe that whoever made the film read this book. Now, of course, once he gets into the Satanic Temple with the two sisters, they've got sacrificial altars for little kids and Egyptian art and all the stuff you would think. And the two sisters explain, like, hey, the world's history that they believe in isn't true, which is, again, a very occult idea. They're like, that's the sheeple, that's the masses dummy talk. The Sphinx is actually 50,000 years old. It's actually a lot older than those pyramids. And it originally had the head of a lion, not the human head of the pharaoh. Which I don't know how that plays into the argument about what the Sphinx stands for. Because it eats, it's the predator, but then it's got the, you know, the head of the human. But they're claiming it originally had a lion as the ultimate hunter, the highest on the food chain. Which, because these Satanists believe in social Darwinism. They think it's their right to enslave the poor because they are God's chosen ones. And their argument is like, look, mankind learned to kill the lion, which placed man higher up on the food chain, and for man to become gods of the people, they had to depict it on the Sphinx. And this is why they eat people, is to show dominance and assert their place on the food chain. Because you got to understand, if they're saying, look, all of mankind became higher on the food chain to the lion, well, surely there's an elite group of humans higher up than the main humans. And that's them. That's the Illuminati. It's the aristocrats. Quote, this is why the practice of cannibalism is necessary to the attainment of aristocracy. And that is the secret of the Sphinx. It has the body of the lion who eats people, but it has the head of the pharaoh who looks human. So it is the perfect symbol of aristocratic cannibalism. And if you recall in the film Fresh, when he eats the meat, he says, look, we eat the human meat because it makes us feel powerful. Another overlap. And if you read the book, I'll read you from the book here. It says, there are two ways in which blood drinking can lead to a feeling of power. One way is the use of blood drinking to achieve occult power. This is the mystical path which leads to worldly power. The other way is to acquire physical strength and stamina through the drinking of adrenalized blood. This chapter makes reference to both these uses of blood drinking. And it talks about how the sisters had this ancient Egyptian occult book that talked about how they would eat brains of the royals and the pharaohs in order to pass on the knowledge. It's a practice they used to do because they thought that's how that worked. They would pull the brains out with the hooks, like in Tales from the Dark Side, that 80s movie with Christian Slater. They pull the brains out of the mummy. It was the same thing. So you see these practices apparently exist underground to this day. And we're going to revisit the idea of the adrenalized blood here in a little bit. So put a pin in that for now. Interesting side note here. He talks about how the United Nations will be taking over the world. And that this group, of course, includes the Illuminati cannibals. And that Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030 documents show the plutocratic plan for global takeover and how the globalists would control all food, water, and animals and herd humans into settlement zones to be watched and controlled. Sounds very deep into the conspiracy world. Now, there's elements of that that could be true. The plutocracy, the technocracy of Neoplatonism there. The meditation room of the United Nations does have that big square black stone, the Saturnian stone, and the sickle of the Grim Reaper of Saturn. So it could be, right? I'm going to read you from his book. He says, these globalists are traitors or enemies to the United States of America because they secretly oppose the Constitution and plot to destroy the sovereignty of our nation. Their loyalty is not to any sovereign nation, but to a new world order, global plutocracy that intends to announce itself when it is too powerful to be resisted. Some analysts place this date of announcement as early as the year 2020 AD. Now, obviously, he wrote this book in 2014 and updated in 2019. I would argue this statement probably came from 2014, because he would have just said as early as next year, right? Now, it's interesting because 2020, we got an announcement about UFOs. So, not quite the same, but very, very a huge announcement, right? That we don't know what some of these flying objects are. Now, to get back to the cannibalism aspect, he said that the companies that sold the human meat did so for high prices. I mean, obviously, right? And in the film Fresh, we hear that one plate is $30,000. So, you know. But what's more interesting, what's more damning, is that the meat chosen is done, it's selected upon, based upon photos of the people and information about the people that they're eating, which is exactly how they depict it in Fresh. Do you remember in Fresh, Steve would package up the meat with some personal effects, some clothing, some photos, and send it to the Illuminati to eat. In the book, he details it as such. He says, once imprisoned in the warehouse, the human cattle are well fed to fatten them up. Then photos of them in the nude are taken. These photos aren't for sexual purposes. Wealthy cannibals select the victims they wish to consume based on photos and other information. When an individual is selected by a cannibal buyer, the chosen victim is then slaughtered. These professional human meat producers prepare their products in various ways so that when it's packaged, it doesn't look different from any other types of meat, which is just like they do it in Fresh. He shrink wraps it just like meat. Wealthy cannibals look at the photos and select the human meat they want based on their whims or desires. The victims are inspected by doctors before being slaughtered. Thus, quality is ensured. Meat from, which is kind of, Steve's a doctor. And he makes sure that they're not too stressed out. Remember that? We're going to talk about that in a second. It says, meat from both adults and children is available, again, depending upon the particular slaughterhouse. Such human cattle meat is very expensive and considered a delicacy. Now, this is exactly as they depicted in Fresh. They did not depict it with the children. I would argue that would be too controversial. But he's saying, Barker is saying that humans are actually spiked with fear to adrenalize the meat. And in the film, you hear the opposite, right? He says that he doesn't want the girls to have fear because it makes the meat bad. And I thought, oh, okay, well, that one, he didn't quite get it right there. But then in the book, he also says that they could also kill the people quickly so it didn't have fear. Like, there's two flavors, I guess, one with fear and one without. So again, it kind of lines up with the film. That one's a sort of half, I'll give it a half point. All right. He says that the ancient Jews were a faction that worshiped Saturn and Baal and Satan, and they would eat the non-Jews, the goyim, according to kosher rules. And to join, you have to go through an initiation ceremony called the Marriage of the Beast, which included a goat. All right. I'm gonna read you about the ceremony. He said the ceremony would begin on September 7th and end on September 8th. The initiates were kept awake the whole time. They were sleep deprived and on stimulants by the end of the second day. There were rituals, lectures, and tests. All this would lead up to a sexual ritual, which involved a woman having sex with a goat. First, the goat would be dressed up with a crown, vest, and cape. Everyone would bow down to him and say things like, "All hail Satan." Then a woman would have sex with the goat on a stage in front of everyone. The goat would then be stripped and tortured with fire. They would harvest the goat's blood and then cook its flesh. The observers would drink the blood and have an orgy. Then after the orgy, they would eat the goat's flesh. It was considered to be a kind of communion with Satan. I never attended the ceremony, but it was described to me by others, and I did see photos and movies of some of it. This is exactly, almost to the T, the ritual we talked about on the Hocus Pocus episode I did last year. And oh, by the way, guess what logo, guess what image we see in the film Fresh? A goat, the Baphomet. Yes, the one they're making sexy time with. Yes, the one that's representing Satan. Yes, the one that in the Hocus Pocus, if you haven't listened to my Hocus Pocus episode, I don't know where you at. If you ain't listening to Hocus Pocus, where you at? Because in that episode, I proved that film uses an actual satanic ritual, verbatim. And that ritual is just as Mr. Barker describes here. So for us to not believe Barker is to say, well, you know, I think he read that same satanic ritual and he just embellished and put it in the book. Maybe. There's a whole lot of maybes, though. I think this guy's telling the truth. I don't know, maybe. Maybe not. I go back and forth, right? And he talks about all these videos that he was forced to watch. One had a girl that had parts surgically removed, which, again, just like the film Fresh, he said sometimes they would immobilize her and then in a surgical manner remove parts of her body, exactly like the film. These they would eat in front of her. This was an extreme form of sexual sadism. The woman in the film was missing some fingers, a foot, and some toes on her other foot. It's exactly like the film. Because the other prisoner girls, they're walking around missing body parts. Even his wife's missing her leg. Steve's wife in the film. Noah's missing that ass. He cuts her ass off first, which didn't make any sense to me. He also talks about the different kinds of blood drinkers. One is a sipper. They call it a sipper, meaning they periodically acquire blood from the victim without killing them, which is like how they harvest steam in the Dr. Sleep story. I did a show on that way back when. Was it 2018, I think? 2019? That's another good one. If you want to talk about adrenochrome and all this crazy stuff, that's what they talk about in the movie. You keep them alive, but they're imprisoned, which is kind of how this Fresh movie is. They keep them in prison. They don't kill them right away. They cut off different body parts. But all of this is to acquire the life force of the victim, which, to be fair, in the film Fresh, it seems to be more about the taste and the power and the acquiring of the power. But Steve confirms that they like the females better than the males, so I don't know. They want to acquire the life force. The purpose for the depravity, another purpose, I should say, they said it was a test to see if certain people deserve to be at the top of certain corporate ladders or powers of position. You have to have zero empathy to be in some of these positions. And I'm going to read you. It says, there are two ways in which blood drinking can lead to a feeling of power. One way is the use of blood drinking to achieve occult power. This is the mystical path that leads to worldly power. The other way is to acquire physical strength and stamina through the drinking of adrenalized blood. So they're saying that they would drink blood to gain power. Oftentimes, if people were victims of the abuse, that sometimes they would try to get the upper hand back by drinking their abuser's blood. There's levels to this, right? I mean, that's why Evan Rachel Wood and Marilyn Manson were exchanging the blood drinking, right? And you know, the book talks about the Church of Satan, which Marilyn Manson, of course, an honorary priest in the Church of Satan, friends with Anton LaVey, who I would ascertain showed him how to drink the blood and why. And he's talking about, not only do you get the powers, but if you are trying to join this brotherhood, which obviously opens up doors to run big organizations. And a lot of people say, look, these people are psychopaths. They're like shape-shifting reptile people with no emotion. That's how you prove it. Because could you imagine doing this stuff? You would have to be a psychopath, but that's what they want. You can't have empathy for other humans. And if you can't drink the blood, then they're not going to let you be the CEO of whatever, Starbucks, I don't know. because you got to be able to abuse people and not pay them enough. You got to be okay with that. You got to sleep at night being like, you know what? I've got more money than I could ever spend, and I still want to make sure that these people are suffering down on the bottom. To get back to Anton LaVey, I'm going to read you the reference to Anton LaVey. He talks about the Blood Countess Elizabeth Bathory and Vlad the Impaler. But he says, when a high-degree mason is initiated, he drinks blood from a human skull. Consider the peculiar rituals of the prominent Skull and Bone Society of Yale University. A friend of Anton LaVey once reported that he held a dinner party event back in the 60s, where he invited friends to eat human flesh that he claimed he had acquired from a legal medical source. Ain't that something? Ain't that interesting? Now, I'm not going to name names, but like I know people who have human skulls. It's a very strange thing, but you can buy human skulls, apparently. I don't know if the channels are legal or not. I know that's not something that is openly advertised, though. You don't walk into a store and find a skull on the shelf. It just goes to show there's a market for this kinds of stuff. And I'm not saying that the guy I know that has the skull is into blood drinking. I really don't. I know he's not, right? I know he's not. But I'm just saying there's a slippery slope, maybe, you know? There's people that are into some of this macabre stuff, the forbidden fruit. Now we're not gonna go through the whole book, right? Because we're coming up on an hour already. The book goes into all kinds of wild stuff, though. Videos he saw, he saw them killing and cooking up babies, which makes me think, what role would Fresh have in all this? Were they trying to insert humor into this dark realm that's possibly real? Is it to entice us to accepting it, to maybe even wishing we were one of these elites that could do this? Like, oh man, I wish I could have a $30,000 plate of meat. I would do it. I would eat it. I would want to know. Kind of like eating dogs, right? Like I was in South Korea. I was stationed there for a year. The eating dogs is a delicacy. It wasn't cheap, as far as I knew. I don't think I ever ate dog meat. I'm assuming I didn't. Obviously, I would never actively go out and eat it. But the argument I remember hearing was that they said, look, you don't have to worry about them putting dog meat in regular food because it's a delicacy. It's expensive. They're not just going to mix it in with ground beef, you know? And in the film Fresh, Steve, he talks about how human flesh is the most exquisite thing you'll ever experience. That's why it's $30,000 a plate. It's kind of like that. And there's a lot of people that say, well, I would eat dog meat. I'm like, damn. Oh, they're no different than a cow. And I get the logic there. They're animals, right? But damn, you can't eat dogs. Man's best friend. How dare you? Shame on you. He says that, why are we talking about that? He says MKUltra was really just a scientific approach to satanic ritual abuse. I find that to be one of the most interesting statements he made. With the plan, because I think that's how it's going to work. I think they need the technocracy to make us believe in the science as God. And then once science and this atheist thing takes hold, man's a spiritual being. We'll eventually need to worship something, and that's when Lucifer comes along. Satanism as an accepted science. He says, high adept Satanism is the philosophy and practice of those Satanists who seek to commune with Satan primarily through psychic means. They seek an intense and personal psychic connection with Satan. Their practices give them psychic powers beyond those utilized by the average human being at this time. And again, this leads into the alien talk. And like I said, they officially announced the existence of UFOs in 2020, just like he said would happen, a big announcement. And it's too much to discuss and break down here, but the alien books I wrote talk about this, the psychic connection. It's a psychic component, a mental component. And if you listen to a lot of these big names in the UFO community right now talking about the phenomenon, you'll know that there is a psychic component to this, manifesting it into a reality. And that's, you know, that's arguably what Jack Parsons was doing, channeling the UFOs, channeling the aliens, doing rituals. There was another section about a film he saw that was in color, and listen to this. Someone had expertly stuffed her body in the way that taxidermists do with animals. Her corpse was posed like the Venus de Milo statue, but now it was held in place with the help of a metal bar behind it. In this film, on a bench in front of the stuffed corpse, were a man and woman wearing masks having sex together. Boom! Truth bomb dropped. Is this tying us into Kubrick's Eyes Wide Shut? Is this tying into all of the discussions about human furniture? If you look at the idea of blood drinking and cannibalism, and the motivation behind it is to assert dominance, it's the power of being the highest apex predator amongst humans. What more way to degrade other weaker humans than to make them furniture and sit on them, put your feet up on them? It's exactly what we saw in Squid Game. They put their feet up on the people, the elites, the Illuminati do, so they can watch humans butcher each other for money. They're showing us all these examples. Why? Are they trying to eventually reveal to us that this is something that's really happening? Here's another one. Another parallel to Fresh. One more. I mean, there's so many, right? He's talking about the Baron here. He says, he took me to an expensive club where we had dinner together. It was a pleasant experience and we had an interesting conversation. He ordered a vegetarian meal and I had the same. I remember that we had fried okra with a spicy breading. We also had a delicious salad made up of avocados, greens, baby tomatoes, and olives. The dessert was a chocolate mousse, and each bite melted in my mouth. We drank massive quantities of gourmet coffee. Oh, that sounds good. It was a memorable feast. Over dinner, he explained to me that except for an occasional indulgence in cannibalism, he never ate meat. It was interesting that he talked about this so openly in the dining room with other people at tables nearby, but they were busy with their own conversations and not interested in ours. He seemed unashamed, even proud of the fact that he was a cannibal. He explained that cannibalism among the aristocracy was quite different than the cannibalism practiced by savages off in a jungle somewhere. He said it was practiced for reasons of psychology and social positioning. So he's a vegetarian, and guess what happens in the film Fresh? Guess what happens with Steve? What do we find out about Steve? He's a vegetarian, yes, except for when he eats human meat. There's so many parallels. This book, and again, it's like, it's very hard to know, is this real? Is Kurth Barker's story real? He talked about films that he saw that were in black and white, which is odd. It's like, can they even film in black and white anymore? Why were they black and white? There's some unbelievable elements that he's born into this family, and he's got these incredibly wealthy connections. Yet he's not wealthy himself. And there's another motivation here where I would argue that he's very Christian based and trying to wake people up to the Luciferian satanic imagery. And it's like, well, you know, some people get overzealous about their religion. And if I was overzealously Christian, I would be like, well, you know what? The ends justify the means. If I get people into Christianity off of a lie, off of a sensational story about how awful Satanism is, it's still worth it. You know, the juice is worth the squeeze. So those are some of the ideas that I would say, man, that's what makes me a little skeptical. But he's got some really good detail. And I mean, either he's got a future as a great fiction writer, or he really was a part of this. And he's got very real level of detail that makes it very believable. But it's almost unbelievable at times, though, too. Like how dark it is. He talks about a video where they opened up silver platters to expose the heads of infants and stuff. It's like, bro. And it's almost unbelievable. It's like, they wouldn't go that far, but maybe they would. Because I do believe that some of these things exist. He's, he's clearly intelligent by the way it's written, which gives more leeway to the idea that maybe he was in a wealthy family. And we agree on a lot of stuff. So part of me really wants to believe this. He's very knowledgeable about all things conspiracy, which in a way makes me more skeptical. Like how he talks about problems with the Fabian Society and the socialism. And I'm like, oh boy, here we go. Of course, here we go. It's always the communist Red Scare with a lot of these conspiracy theorists, right? But then he comes back and he talks about how capitalism can have the same problems and how there's centralization of power into the hands of the few. So he seems pretty balanced, and he brings me back in, and I'm like, all right, okay. He's not just like an overzealous truther. And listen to this. I'm going to read you here. This is to support that claim. He says, so you need to look at the true cause of the widespread pollution that is killing our world. In reality, this comes more from irresponsible corporate greed than from overpopulation. And it's the Illuminati leaders who own these polluting corporations. It's the corporations that are owned by the Illuminati, which pollute the world and suppress non-polluting technology. So the Illuminati creates the problem of pollution, then blames it on innocent people. Then the same Illuminati leaders come up with the solution to the problem they've created. That solution is to kill off most of the people of Earth. And I agree with that. I think that's on the money. This is exactly what the Great Reset talk is. It's the blockchain distribution of natural resources by the 1,000 richest corporations. Like, they have no hand in why this happened. It's because you had to drive the vehicle. You could have had the electrical, you could have rode an electric bike to work, but you had to drive your car. Meanwhile, they're flying around in private planes, but they're like, you know what? You need to give us control over all the resources and we'll make sure everyone gets their fair share. So I agree with that. I do find some of the elements odd. And it's kind of like when people claim they were abducted by aliens and taken to other worlds. Like, I want to believe that, but I'm so skeptical sometimes. But Barker really nailed this on the head. And it seemed like it was before all these conspiracies about blood drinking and adrenochrome went mainstream. So, I don't know. We're definitely vibing on what we think is actually going on. So, even if he's making up the story, in some ways, it's not irrelevant. But he's speaking some truths in the book about where they want to take us. I think so, too, with transhumanism and alien possession and all that. I'm going to read this to you. We only got a couple more and then we're done. All right. Hang in there. What you need to understand is that the transhumanist movement is actually a demonic alien invasion. Did you catch that? The transhumanist movement is a demonic alien invasion. It is an attempt to colonize the Earth on behalf of malevolent extraterrestrials. Unlike the sci-fi movies where the invading aliens land in ships, this invasion is being conducted by demon-possessed human beings who are subtly introducing extraterrestrial culture to our world. The openly stated plan of the transhumanists is to alter human beings through genetic engineering, cyborg technology, and the control of supercomputers. If these transhumanists were to be allowed to succeed, they would be creating the alien invaders out of human genetic materials. Thus, the invaders would not have to fly all the way from their planets to ours. Wow. That's a pretty wild idea, right? That the transhumanism is a way of sort of re-engineering our bodies to take on a new alien life form that is demonic. I don't know. It's interesting, though, right? It's an interesting take on the digital matrix idea. And a lot of people, if you follow, some theories are that the aliens want our human body because they want our souls. They want to take the souls, put them back into their bodies because they've lost their soul. They're fallen demons, fallen angels. So that kind of fits into that. Like, they're going to put us into the digital matrix, connect our mind to the matrix to make it seem real, and take our souls and our spirit and use them because they lost theirs. Now, and listen to this. How much do I want to read you? Okay, almost done. One more. Let me read one more to you. This is about high adept Satanism and its real goals. It says, the ultimate goal of the high adept Satanists is complete destruction of the human race and the natural ecosystem of Earth. They pursue this goal because they no longer identify themselves with humanity. They identify themselves with those alien beings who live on other worlds, which are under the rule of Satan. They desire to displace humanity with a new alien species, and they desire to radically transform the environment of Earth through massive geological engineering. If this geoengineering project of theirs were to succeed, the planet Earth would be transformed to more like the alien homeworld of Satan. In order to achieve this agenda to colonize the Earth, the high adept Satanists understand that they must eliminate the human race through an extensive program of depopulation. And this sounds a lot like David Icke's theory on the shape-shifting lizard people. They no longer identify themselves as humans. And this goes into the Sphinx idea that they are the high apex predators. And they can control us. They can destroy us. And the geoengineering, of course, you know, that ties into all this crazy science nonsense, creating robot mosquitoes and nanobots and chemtrails, all that stuff. But he talks a lot about how the corporations run by the Illuminati are killing our planet with pollution and suppressing free energy because that's part of the plan. They want to depopulate because, you know, studies, they say like up to 800,000 people a year die just from air pollution, just from breathing shitty air, you know. In Utah, we've got some of the worst air in the country sometimes. And I critiqued it because they said they made this study about sources of air pollution problems in Utah, and they proceeded to blame it on all the commuters and people with wood stoves. Meanwhile, Chevron and all these big oil companies, they're blowing out, they're refining oil in Salt Lake. It's just boom. You just see it. There's tons of smoke. Now, you know, common sense and science are two different things, but common sense tells me, like, well, they're churning out a hell of a lot of smoke, but I realize there's a lot of people driving, so maybe. But it's hard to believe it because this is a state that just loves big business more than anything on the planet. Money is the god here in Utah. By far, the bottom line is money. Well, maybe not by far, because they seem to have a problem with culturally. They don't allow, like, you can't gamble here, right? There's no lottery. They're weird about the alcohol. They're weird about marijuana. They're weird about strip clubs. Like, there's a lot of moral panic with a lot of the things going on here in Utah. Anyways, I don't want to get off on a side tangent. But yeah, the whole idea is that they're okay with making the air dirty. They're good with it because it's going to kill all the dumb people like me and you that don't deserve to live. Now, how do they get away from it? I don't know. Maybe they just breathe real shallow or something. All right, let's wrap it up. In conclusion. My wife, Josie Weisop, maybe you know her. Maybe you've listened to Breaking Social Norms. We actually did a really interesting Most Evil Nerds shows that you should really check out. Breaking Social Norms, available everywhere. But anyways, she's reading this book on trauma, and she said something to me because she knows I'm into all this wacky stuff, right? She's not into it, but she knows I am, and I share my ideas with her, as you hear on the podcast. But the doctor who wrote the book, listen to this. The doctor said that adrenaline in the human body releases stores of sugar. And the thought, why she told me that is because, does that explain why they're obsessed with adrenalizing and making fear surge through the human body before they eat it. It's what you see in Dr. Sleep. It's what you see in a lot of these adrenochrome theories. Does it release sugar into the meat and make it taste sweeter? Is that why in the film Fresh, some of it gets the fear and some doesn't? Some people have a sweet tooth, some people don't. Interesting idea. I've never heard that take before. And of course, it would have to come from the outsider of the conspiracy world. You know, she doesn't live in this world and of conspiracy talk. So she's got this great open mind to sort of take in different ideas. I thought, you know what? That's genius. That's actually shocking that that would be the case. We're also talking about revelation of the method. When we talk about this book and these films, maybe we're seeing a slow roll for acceptance, ultimately, by the human population. That, look, there's just people, you know, and it's the same way with rich people. Like, people defend them. Like, well, you know, they worked really hard. No, they didn't, first off. I mean, not all of them. Some of them really do invent something. But a lot of them just come from money. That's why they, when you look at the world's richest people, there's like a list of self-made and then just inherited wealth. Like, we just accept it. We're like, yeah, you know, they really worked for it. And that's the same idea here. They want to roll out acceptance. Like, well, you know, you worked your way up and you can afford human meat. Go for it. And then Barker's whole book, he goes on and on about how the Illuminati can only make themselves known when there will be no resistance to them. So right now there's still resistance, hence all the censorship. So if they can get science or whatever to get acceptance to these topics of blood drinking and psychically channeling Satan, then they're one step closer to revealing themselves. Now he finishes this book where I'd like to finish this episode, because this was a very dark episode, all right? I'm going to read you one last passage, and then we're going to wrap it up, and then we're going to bring light and love into our lives, all right? Yet hating these hostile extraterrestrials, or whatever they are, does no good and will not help you. In fact, all of your negative emotions serve them. This alien invasion is a psychic paradigm that imposes a deceptive illusion of reality upon the people of Earth. This paradigm keeps your expansive mental powers locked up in a little box. You are programmed by the media as to what you should think and as to what you should believe. If you buy into the illusions presented by the mass media, you will live in fear and anger. I'm not suggesting that you disconnect from your emotions, not even your negative emotions. I'm suggesting that there is a way to rise above your negative emotions through spiritual awakening. There is a source of all creation, God the Father. You know that you are in tune with this divine creative spirit when you are aware of his unlimited and unconditional love through the Holy Spirit sent to us by his Son, Jesus the Christ. When the human race fully awakens to our untapped gifts of the Spirit, then the demonic gray aliens and their reptilian thugs will simply go away because they will have no choice. They cannot live in the light of God's infinite love. The vast tidal wave of humanity's spiritual awakening will drive them off. And that's a great place to end this. Because I don't like the idea of instilling hatred and anger and fear about what could very well be happening. I mean, these are very dark topics. This is very crazy stuff. This is demonic, right? Eating people? Like, what the hell, man? So I don't like that negativity of that, of instilling the fear, but like, we got to be aware of it, right? It's kind of like watching the news, you know? I don't watch the news too much because it just puts me in a bad state. Like, you know, watching about these wars and the viruses, and it's like, oh, brother, like, okay, I know these things exist. How do I not let it ruin my day, though? Which is a real Western world, first world country problem. Like, oh, I don't want to let this war bum me out, you know? But the truth of the matter is, like, I really have very minimal role in that. How I can help out with that sort of thing, right? But it's a balancing act. How do you pay attention to know there's these negative things happening, and how do you not let it drag you down? Because ultimately, our lives are very short, and our experience here on Earth is to try to go towards the light and the love, which to some, it's Christ. To some, it's, you know, Buddhist meditation. And I'm not here to tell you which one to choose. It's whatever brings you happiness, right? I mean, I struggle with my beliefs sometimes, but I do know that when you focus on positivity, it makes it a better place to live, you know? Because if you get too much into this fear-based thinking and you know, Alex Jones beating on the desk. Sorry, Alex Jones. I always pick on Alex Jones. I just do it because I know everyone knows who I'm talking about. There's a lot of truthers like that. Very much like, you know, ridicule and like, oh, stupid people, stupid sheep, wake up. You know, I just don't like that. I don't like the vibe that sets out. But anyway, because I want you to listen to the show and be informed and put this into your bank of decisions of what you want to believe in, but I want you to ultimately have a better day and feel better and you know, maybe alleviate some anxiety by learning more about what could be happening. I know that's a weird idea, right? I'm going to alleviate anxiety by telling you about how they're really drinking human blood. But it's like he's saying you. The mass media and some of these ideas, they push fear and anger. And while those are justifiable negative emotions, you can't live there. You can't live there. It's going to make the limited time you have on this earth, time that God gave you to connect with other souls and to try to experience the beautiful things about this world, it just takes them away. There we go. Okay. That's all I got. Thank you for being a supporter. I still got one more bonus episode this month for you. This was the third episode. We got a fourth one coming. Stay tuned. Stay subscribed. And of course, stay woke.